Greetings, my little oddities. This is Monica Caraway from Small Biz Thoughts. Welcome to the show. Today we have April Sage, Director of Healthcare IT at Online Tech. April will be talking about HIPAA compliance, a topic you've been asking us to cover in our Odd Tuesdays podcast. We also have Ran Buccianico in her debut in our Oddball segment. Ran will be discussing how you should record HAS, or Hardware as a Service, in QuickBooks. Now briefly, some March IT news. Exchange Solution Provider is holding an event March 2nd to the 4th in Los Angeles. More information can be found at exchange-events.com. Carl will be in Toronto in the ongoing SMB Nation Emerging Technology Tour. If you cannot make it to Ontario, the tour is set to hit a number of cities throughout the year. Go to tour.smbnation.com for details, or you can go to whereintheworldiscarl.com for a full listing of the SMB tour and other events Carl is presenting at. Axient's Double Days events are happening all over the country in March. They are having events in Vegas, March 11th through the 13th, Chicago and Boston, March 11th, Denver and Newark, March 12th, and many more. To see what the conference is all about and what cities they are visiting, please visit axient.com. There is Eulistic MSP Workshop in Boston, March 27th. Please go to eulistic.com for more on that. And MSP World is holding an event March 26th to the 28th in Orlando. You can visit mspalliance.com for more information. Now, let's welcome Carl and Healthcare IT's April Sage.
I'm talking today with April Sage, who is the Director of Healthcare IT at Online Tech in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Carl. Happy to be here with you.
So you do a lot of stuff with HIPAA. Your expertise is in HIPAA and high tech. And right now we were just chatting off microphone about how there's a lot of confusion for small IT providers. Let's give a sense of what you do. Like, what sort of services do you provide to your small and medium-sized business clients?
Sure. Well, Online Tech is a provider of hosting services, and we provide a range of hosting services from colocation to dedicated servers to encrypted clouds, all with the main focus on handling the security and compliance safeguards that are required for sensitive data.
So what's the size of your average client? Are these like large doctors and medical offices, or are they two-person shops, or who buys these services?
You know, that's an excellent question, Carl, and that answer changes as we look at the differences in our service offerings. We tend to work with our large healthcare systems on the colocation side. They often will come to us for their own private suite. And then we also work with some smaller healthcare organizations, such as multi-specialty physicians. And on the far other side of the spectrum, particularly for the cloud hosting area, we work with a lot of software as a service vendors who are developing platforms to serve the healthcare industry. And those folks tend to start off on a very small scale, especially during their development phase. And those who have hit the mark in the marketplace end up growing at a very fast pace. And so those folks tend to start with maybe a server or two, and then end up adding maybe a server a month or a server a week, depending on their growth. So we actually end up working with customers who start off in very small environments all the way to needing their own private suite in the data center.
Very good. So a lot of the small IT providers are, I guess, engaged in a debate almost of should they even get into healthcare? Should they stay in healthcare if they're there? You know, are they going to get like blindsided by high tech and HIPAA as more and more regulations increase and the doctors continue to say, oh, that doesn't apply to us, you know?
It's a great question. you know, we've been fortunate that the Department of Health and Human Services has clarified some of the responsibility and accountability issues. They've made it very clear that cloud providers, for example, will be held accountable for protecting patient data, whereas before there was a hope that most of the back-end service providers could kind of claim innocence by virtue of being something akin to a conduit. Health and Human Services has made it clear that that is not the case, and they are fully expecting to see all of the administrative, technical, and physical safeguards in place, not only in the healthcare system, but also in those business associates who are supporting it. So for smaller businesses, the healthcare space is both a great opportunity and a significant burden. You know, the smaller businesses really have the kind of agility to react to the disruptive innovation that the healthcare industry is screaming for in order to figure out how on earth are we going to lower the cost of healthcare, but also have better outcomes for our patients. On the other side, the cost of compliance and those external audits and making sure all of those safeguards are in place, not just at any point in time, but on an ongoing basis, is really significant. So we find that we end up in very close partnerships with our IT service providers so that we make sure we clearly understand who is addressing which of the safeguards and going through the complete list to make sure that we have all of our bases covered. And we find that that's a huge relief for our clients. You know, we end up with some very enterprising physicians who identify a need in the healthcare system, and suddenly they become founders of mobile healthcare apps. And they understand their business incredibly well, but they don't understand how to keep the IT infrastructure safe. And this is a place where an IT consultant can really be a huge benefit to those people by connecting them in a network of partners that can make sure the safeguards are in place. So it does require a bit of homework to understand the compliance rules, but they're not so different than the normal security protocols that one would find to protect any sensitive data. So personally, I think it's a wonderful opportunity.
Good. Well, it's interesting because sometimes we talk to people who say, this is so big and so complicated and so scary, you should just get out, run away. And other people say, look, it's just, you know, it's just another day in the woods. You know, this is, maybe it's not PCI, but it's fairly straightforward, you know, and you should just do it. And it sounds like you think this is comparable. This is not something that people should necessarily run away from and just avoid healthcare as part of their choice of vertical.
No, not at all. And again, just to stress, it really helps to have partners who are familiar with the space. You know, we were very fortunate to have wonderful guidance by some attorneys who specialized in healthcare IT, and it really does help to get some counsel in that area. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to spend thousands of dollars on private counsel, but, you know, there's a very rich and growing network of healthcare IT lawyers who are sharing presentations, sharing knowledge, and it doesn't need to be done on a one-to-one basis. But if you can connect with partners who have some exposure to the space to help break it down, people who have been through it, it's really not so bad. It would be scary to tackle this as an individual by yourself. But you don't have to look too far to find folks who are familiar with the compliance rules. And there's a lot of willingness in this industry to collaborate and work together. So I would strongly suggest that people at least dip a toe in the water.
Right. Now, if somebody's got an opportunity and they think, maybe April will be able to help me out, figure out, if nothing else, just get the colo going so that I know that it's set up right and so forth. Do you primarily work with IT professionals who are in Michigan or in the Detroit area, or could they be anywhere?
Actually, we work with IT professionals across the country, and we certainly have a good experience specific to the colocation and the cloud services to help you understand how to meet HIPAA compliance, to help you know what responsibilities we can assist with and what things you still need to account for. You know, we don't have all the answers to everything, but we're really fortunate to have a great network. And if we don't know the answer, we will make every effort to connect you with a partner who can help you out.
Very nice. So what's probably the biggest gotcha that people have to be aware of? Because I know, like I say, there's a lot of fear of like, I don't want to go in there and get some $250,000 fine because I did the wrong thing. So what's the biggest, easiest gotcha to avoid?
Well, one thing that often comes as a surprise and shock to people new in the area is this whole business associates agreement. And so it definitely helps to understand what the accountabilities are in the chain of trust and to understand what the flow of responsibilities looks like. So if you're not already familiar with a business associates agreement and understanding who needs to sign it and who's responsible for what, I would strongly encourage taking a look. The Department of Health and Human Services has a standard example of a business associates agreement on their website. So that's something to get familiar with. And there's really nothing terribly unclear or unreasonable in that contract. But if you're in the middle of trying to architect a system and suddenly you encounter this legal document, it can really throw people for a bit of a curveball. The other suggestion is just to embrace the notion of compliance. If you try to work against or get around the regulation, it just causes a lot of headaches. And it's really not that difficult to comply with all of the rules and certainly in everyone's best interest. And helps everyone sleep well at night. So I guess I would say just get very comfortable with the rules and safeguards and, you know, find someone who's been down the path before.
Very good. So why don't you give folks your website so in case they want to take a look at what kinds of things you do and get in touch with you, they can do that.
Oh, sure. Our website is www.onlinetech.com.
It is a great domain name.
Thank you.
You couldn't get anything close to that today. So.
That's very true.
So, all right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I certainly appreciate it, and I really hope that you know folks take a look at this and you know not shy away from it. I agree with you. It's a huge opportunity.
It's a very exciting time for the healthcare space, and we need all the help we can get. So, jump on board.
All right. So now. You're going to have to forgive me, but I'm going to say this. Thank you for your sage advice. We've been talking today with April Sage, Director of Healthcare IT at Online Tech in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Thanks, Carl, very much. It was a pleasure.
Now let's welcome, in our oddball segment, Rayanne Buccianico. Rayanne joined Carl in our annual SMB online conference, the IT Business Reboot 2013 conference, last year. She has a lot of advice for MSPs specifically on how to use QuickBooks in your business. Her first oddball segment highlights how to record HAAS in QuickBooks.
Hello everyone, Ryan here from ABC Solutions in sunny Clearwater, Florida. We're an accounting firm working with IT professionals to simplify their accounting process. I'm a creature of simplicity. You did not go into business to become an accountant, and I have no desire to turn you into one. Once we simplify the process, the business owner can easily obtain and use the information in the accounting system. In this series, I will take basic business tasks that MSPs face each day and outline the steps to record the transactions for current and future reporting purposes. The idea is to keep it simple, but thorough. Today, I want to talk about recording hardware as a service. With cloud computing becoming more popular, small businesses want to go to the cloud but haven't figured out how to make it happen yet. Rather than buy new equipment if their three-year plan is to move to the cloud, many IT firms are finding it easier to offer hardware as a service and bundle it with their managed services contracts. Hardware as a service can be broken out into four basic steps. Step number one, buy the equipment. This is a fixed asset of your company and should be recorded in the fixed assets section of your balance sheet. It is not inventory. Inventory is something that you sell. You're not selling this equipment to your customer. You are renting it to them. Therefore, the asset belongs to you or your company and should be recorded as such. Make sure that you note the model and serial number, purchase date and price, and of course, the customer's name and location of that hardware. When you're setting up your accounts in the fixed asset section, you may want to split it out by either the rental term for three-year rentals or five-year rentals, or the equipment type, such as servers, desktops, routers, and switches. Step number two is to set up the rental income accounts, and you want to record the monthly rental via the invoices to your customers, and you may want to set up a hardware as a service revenue account on your income statement. Be sure to check with your state's regulations regarding sales tax requirements. Many states expect sales tax to be collected on commercial rentals, and that is exactly what you're doing when you're renting hardware to a business. Number three is to track the costs associated with this. Now, you cannot expense the purchase price of the hardware, although you could elect an expense for depreciation purposes. However, that may skew your profitability reports over time. So consider depreciating using the straight line method over the life of the rental agreement. For instance, if you rent out a desktop and you purchase the desktop for $1,000 and you rent it out for a three-year term, you want to take that $1,000 and divide it out by 36 months and make a journal entry for 1/36 of each month for that price. And this will help keep the profitability of the hardware as a service in line. And if you create a journal entry with that customer's account attached to it, your profitability reports will show both the revenue and the cost associated with that item. Step number four is to retire the item at the end of the lease term. And you can run reports on the fixed assets to remove the equipment from service. It's a relatively simple process if you have everything set up properly in your accounting system. In conclusion, the idea is to make sure that your customer is associated with this transaction throughout the entire process, during the recording of the initial equipment, during the monthly rental income, during the monthly depreciation of the equipment, and then you can follow it all the way through profitability and retirement of that piece of equipment. When you follow these four steps, it'll make the process really smooth throughout the life of the asset. I do have complete instructions on a white paper that can be purchased for $8 by contacting me at rayanne@abcsolutionsfl.com. Again, that's Rayanne, R-A-Y-A-N-N-E, at abcsolutionsfl.com. I hope you enjoyed this week's session on Hardware as a Service. If you have any suggestions for future segments, please contact me at my email address, and I will be more than happy to take your suggestions. Till next time, thanks for checking in.
And now for what's new in tech news. Microsoft has announced that Tony Bates and Tammy Reller will be leaving the company. Along with these moves, Mark Penn, famous for the Scroogle campaign, will be promoted to EVP Chief Strategy Officer. Eric Rutter will be taking over Bates' role and will serve as the interim leader for business development and evangelism while continuing in his role at Advanced Technology. If there is anything the tech world has learned about security, it's that four-digit PINs are fundamentally unsafe. Align that against a poorly managed security foundation, and what you have is an open invitation for brute force attacks. Unfortunately, this is what Apple has done with their iCloud implementation. If an Apple computer is remotely locked by an iOS device, the user would need to enter a 4-digit PIN on the Find My Mac app in order to unlock the machine. A GitHub user by the name of Noi has uploaded iCloud Hacker. It's only about 70 or so lines of Arduino code. The coder reports that it has been successfully tried and tested on 2010, 2012, and 2013 MacBooks. Samsung launched its first Chromebook 2 years ago, and we hadn't heard about any new launches from the company. But now a couple of images showing an unannounced Chromebook 2 have been posted to Twitter by EV Leaks, suggesting that Samsung might launch the next generation of the Chrome-powered laptop soon. We do not know about any hardware specifications of the device, but it is likely to feature an updated processor like its predecessor with updated memory and hard drive. Samsung recently launched the Google Chromebox along with HP for enterprise customers to collaborate using cloud services, and the premium-looking Chromebook 2 could be a partner device for these customers. Since no launch information is provided, there is no option but to wait until Samsung announces the product. Microsoft officially released Internet Explorer 11 as part of Windows 8.1 in October, and in November it offered a version for Windows 7 users as well. Now the latest data from Net Applications shows that IE 11 is now the second most used desktop browser worldwide, less than 5 months after it was released. The stats, based on data gathered from 160 million unique visitors to 40,000 websites, shows that in February 2014, IE 11 commanded 12.8% of the browser market. IE 8 is still the most used browser by far, with 21.73%, according to February's data. New documents from whistleblower Edward Snowden have shown that the GCHQ, the UK's version of the NSA, previously explored the potential of Microsoft's Kinect camera for mass surveillance. According to leaks which were initially published in The Guardian, the GCHQ ran a program called Optic Nerve, which targets 1.8 million Yahoo users and collected webcam images in bulk. According to The Guardian, Optic Nerve began as a prototype in 2008 with the express purpose of facial recognition and building up databases of potential surveillance targets. The GCHQ had initially considered using the Kinect for the same sort of surveillance, although nothing apparently came out of it. Microsoft claims to have never heard of the program and has commented that they were concerned with the claims. Google launched its Google Now launcher for Android 4.4 KitKat with Nexus 5 back in November, but it didn't make it available for other KitKat running devices, such as the Nexus 4, Nexus 7, and the various Google Play editions of popular smartphones. Now the company has launched the Google Now launcher on the Google Play Store and can be installed immediately on qualifying devices. The features of the launcher include easy access to Google Now and the ability to say the words OK Google to initiate a voice input sequence on the device. Apart from the search and discovery features of the launcher, it also provides a slightly revamped notification drawer and home screen with a larger icons and less wasted space. And that's all for tech news. I'd like to thank neowin.net for today's news segment.
Hey, this is Carl, and I just have a couple minutes I want to chat about one of the pet peeves, I guess I have, about social media, and that is Facebook Fridays and Facebook Mondays. I know some people are just having fun and enjoying themselves, but every Monday I get on Facebook, and there's all these people saying, it's another Monday, is the weekend over already, complaining and whining and just, you know, making it sound like they just hate their jobs. And all I can think of is you should quit your job. And I know it seems harsh, but if you really, really hate your job that bad, even if you're self-employed, you need to make a change. And Friday's the same way. Friday comes along and people say, oh, thank God it's Friday. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And even Wednesday's getting bad. There's all this chat. Oh, it's hump day. It's hump day. We're halfway to the weekend and blah, blah, blah. And again, I get that a lot of people are just having fun with the whole thing. But there is this sense that we as a culture don't like our jobs. And I have to tell you, man, I love my job. Every time I have not enjoyed my job, I have changed my job to include more things that I want to do. And the process that I go through is surprisingly straightforward. I make lists, things I want to do more of, things I want to do less of, and then things I don't care about. And I don't really care about the list that I don't care about, but what I do is I try to think of all the things I do in a week, making out invoices, installing printer drivers, you know, hiring people, firing people, writing, installing software, ordering, quoting, on and on and on, everything. And I put it onto one of those lists. And the important lists are what you hate to do and what you love to do. And you really can design your job so that you do more of what you love to do. I mean, if you think about it, if you hate doing invoicing or you hate doing finances, then you should find a way to get somebody else to help you. Whether that's a bookkeeper, somebody else in your staff, a spouse, anybody. Because if you hate doing something, you're going to do a poor job of it. You're going to put it off. You're not going to do it very well, and you're probably not going to do it on time, and you're probably not going to do it right. On the other hand, if you love something, you just want to dig right into it, and you learn faster because you do it more, because you enjoy it, and you turn on the adrenaline while you're working. So think about ways that you can restructure your job to do more of the things you love and fewer things that you dislike. I personally hate installing printer drivers. Hey, one final thought to make you just a little bit of money. You know, you hear all the time that people's attention span is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Now we can't pay attention to anything longer than a 7-second video. Why is that? Well, information overload. We're told that all the information doubles every 3 years now. So that means all the information in your universe will double in 3 years. And then again in the next 3 years. So obviously people are completely overwhelmed and not sure how to deal with that. Some people deal with it by simply tuning it out. They only pay attention to a handful of things. Some people just try to pay attention to everything and they become overwhelmed with everything. So how can you make money on this? How can you figure out how you're going to take advantage of this situation? Well, another way that people deal with information overload is they find filters. Think about the newsletters you subscribe to and the blogs you read. Become a filter for your clients and your prospects. Be the person who says, here, let me help you make sense of this universe. Let me help you make good information decisions. Let me help you find out what's important and what's not so you can make more money. And guess what? When they make more money, you'll make more money.
Carl's current online 5-week course, Core Standard Operating Procedures for Small IT Providers, will be finished March 10th. The next 5-week course is Managing Your Service Board 1, Setup and Core SOPs. It starts Monday, March 17th, and registration is now open. Please go to greatlittleseminar.com. Our annual SMB online conference is really shaping up with the recent announcement of renowned author Michael Gerber of the E-Myth Revisited fame. He is going to be a featured keynote speaker in the conference. Carl reached out to Michael Gerber because his successful business tips are 100% in line with the theme of this year's conference, Systematic Success 2014. Gerber will cover the things you can do to run your business very well over and over again. Early bird pricing for the Systematic Success Conference is available now. The conference runs June 24th to the 26th. Please check it out at smbonlineconference.com. Thanks for joining us this week. Please join our next show March 18th with Carl, our oddball segment, and our special guest Chip Reeves from Bigger Brains. He will be discussing business training that is available for resellers to have as part of their suite of services. I hope you will join us. Take care.